Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, January 24th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Council OKs Hotel Santa Rita Master Plan. Midland Development Corporation votes to invest $45 million into downtown project. By Ben Schaffer, staff writer. Hotel Santa Rita is one step closer to reality following a 5-2 approval vote by Midland City Council on Tuesday. The vote by council was to authorize the execution of a master development plan for the hotel, which is expected to come to Midland in 2027. The project is estimated to exceed $150 million in total. The Midland Development Corporation voted to invest $45 million into the downtown project on Monday. Michael McWilliams, a local investor in the project, said last week that the city will provide tax rebates and incentives for a 10-year period. Almost every public speaker and councilman in the council chambers agreed that downtown Midland needs a new hotel. However, some have disagreed on the optimal way to create it and the impact on the taxpayer. City Councilman-at-Large Dan Corrales and City Councilwoman-at-Large Robin Poole both voted against the master plan for these reasons. Poole said it was easy to polarize these issues. But as a fiscal conservative, she said the $45 million investment from the city towards the project is too high. Corrales said those from both sides of the issue have the common goal of seeing Midland grow and thrive. But Corrales openly disagreed with the project in an opinion piece published Monday night and voted against the project on Tuesday. Corrales said at the beginning of this process, he was on a committee that implemented a request for proposal process for hotel development. It received 4 responses, with 2 from Midland. It was agreed that this hotel project would have a bigger impact. Well, when we get down to it, this contract, that's not exactly what we are going to get. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. There is an A or a B. One option is what was in the proposal. The other option is on one block. From procedure, and maybe I'm just being an uptight lawyer, we follow procedure. When something in the RFP like that, that we voted on council at this dais, and said, this is what we are awarding, this particular proposal won because we scored it. Then we're coming back and saying, well, we're going to give them the financial incentives, but regardless of whether it is a 2-block proposal or a 1-block proposal, it is the same project. I'm sorry, but I am a lawyer, and that is a material change, he said. Corrales said anyone who was buying a property that they believed was 2 blocks and then was told it was 1 block, would have questions. Corrales added that many of his constituents shared a lack of transparency throughout this process about taxpayer costs. Although Corrales and Poole both voted against the project due to the impact on the taxpayer and other reasons, they both wished the investors luck on the project and hoped the investment into downtown Midland would pay off. The other 5 council members and many other Midlanders expressed their support for the project. Diamondback Energy CEO Travis Stice said a hotel hasn't been built in Midland in the past 50 years because there hasn't been a return profile that has allowed capital allocations to justify those projects. What's in front of the commission today is an opportunity for the city to participate in helping underwrite that return profile so that we can get a hotel built, Stice said. These are the questions you should ask. Do we need a hotel downtown? Do we believe in revitalization? And do we have the support of the business community to make something like this to happen? And I think the answers are yes to all of those. Rob Montgomery from Permian Resources discussed the business and cultural benefits of the hotel. Montgomery's employer is headquartered in Midland with offices around the state and in Colorado. I'm speaking on behalf of all my colleagues that make day trips to Midland. They take a morning flight in from Denver and an evening flight out. And that economic activity that is given to United or Southwest could be given to Midland, he said. Montgomery said, without proper amenities in downtown Midland, it's more difficult to attract investors to visit downtown, board members to stay for annual board meetings, or have colleagues come to Midland. Permian Resources strongly supports the Hotel Santa Rita, as it will provide a fixture for all residents of Midland. It will be a great fixture for all the workforce working downtown. Montgomery said the hotel will round out the prior investments that have already been made in downtown Midland, like Centennial Park and the Bush Convention Center. District 4 Councilwoman Amy Stretcher Burks recognized the vote was controversial, but said some past debated votes have turned into projects that have helped shape the Midland of today. District 3 Councilman Jack Ladd called approving the project a no-brainer, saying the hotel will bring joy to the lives of Midlanders and assist the local business community. He was more confident in the project because of local investors' involvement. I think I'd be more hesitant to give $45 million if I didn't know every single person that is going to be contributing to getting this hotel done financially is from Midland, he said. Mayor Lori Blong said she looks at the project as an investor, studying the internal rate of return and return on investment of the project. Anyone who has looked at this would say that the internal rate of return is marginal. It is not an IRR that any of us would be fired up about as an investment for our own money. But I do believe that the return on investment for our community from a financial sense, the fact that it pays out in an estimated 12 years, and the ROI for the intangibles for our community are critically important. You cannot really even place a value on that ROI, she said. Although he wished for a more fair and equitable RFP process in similar future projects, District 2 Councilman John Norman voted for the master plan. District 1 Councilman Scott Dufford said the Convention Center Hotel is only a stepping stone to creating an even more vibrant downtown. This article is entitled Fire Department Battles Early Morning Blaze on Garfield Street by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Midland firefighters worked to extinguish an early morning structure fire in central Midland Tuesday. According to a press release from the city, crews were dispatched to a structure on the 2600 block of Garfield Street around 5:16 a.m. No one was home when the fire started, and no injuries were reported, according to officials. The cause of the fire is undetermined and is currently under investigation. This article is entitled, Hearst Foundations Pass $1.5 Billion Grant Milestone, by Jordan Parker, staff writer. Hearst Foundations announced Monday that they have surpassed $1.5 billion in grants to more than 6,400 organizations, a landmark milestone reached after awarding more than $16 million in grants during the winter quarter. Among the winter quarter grant recipients was UCSF, along with the Paley Center for Media, Partnership Schools in Cleveland, and New York and Pioneer Works in Brooklyn, officials said. The foundations, the William Randolph Hearst Foundation and the Hearst Foundation, Inc., are independent private philanthropies operating separately from Hearst, which owns the Midland Reporter-Telegram. The foundations aim to prioritize philanthropic endeavors for culture, education, health, and social service organizations. Grants from the foundations support organizations that aid in creating career paths for adults, increase academic achievement, and improve quality of life, executives said. The foundations also administer two grants annually, the United States Senate Youth Program, providing public service opportunities for high school students, and the Journalism Awards programs for undergraduate students studying journalism at accredited schools. William Randolph Hearst, my grandfather, believed in the importance of giving back, and we continue to honor his legacy by supporting organizations that make a positive impact on people of all backgrounds across the United States, said William Randolph Hearst III, co-president of Hearst Foundations. Last year, the foundations awarded 283 grants that totaled more than $68 million. We are grateful to partner with nonprofit organizations achieving differentiated results for the communities they serve, Hearst III said. This article is called Aerospace. It is entitled MDC and MITRE Corporation Sign MOU by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Members of the board of directors of the Midland Development Corporation have long supported efforts to establish an aerospace economy in Midland, taking advantage of the Midland International Air and Spaceport. On Monday, members took a further step towards that goal, approving a memorandum of understanding with the MITRE Corporation to establish a framework to work collaboratively on a broad range of strategies, initiatives, and activities to further commercial space and high-speed flight operations in the Permian Basin. Lorsey Sams, MDC board chair, told his fellow board members MITRE has over 20,000 employees and multiple offices across the country. MITRE also has relationships with government agencies, including what he called a tremendous relationship with the Federal Aviation Administration. As we move forward with our high-speed corridor, that relationship will help in that next step, Sams said. The MOU does not include any funding commitments, he said. Any funding requests will have to be brought to the MDC board by the companies themselves. MITRE is a nonprofit organization founded in 1958. Areas of mutual interest between MITRE and MDC include research and development, knowledge sharing, and regional innovation. Each party will bear their own expenses incurred under the MOU unless otherwise agreed to in writing. This article is entitled Midland Health Holding Blood Drive on January 30th by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Midland Health employees and local residents in good health are encouraged to participate in Midland Health's upcoming blood drive. The blood drive will be held January 30th from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Midland Memorial Hospital's main lobby, 400 Roslyn Redfern Grover Parkway. Those interested can sign up for an appointment at donors.vitalant.org or call Taylor Weidenfeld at 432-221-4510. This article is entitled Odessa Driver 19 Flees State Trooper, Loses Control of Vehicle by B.K. Richter, staff writer. The Texas Department of Public Safety arrested a 19-year-old suspect accused of evading arrest and the possession of a controlled substance in Odessa on Tuesday at 11 a.m. According to reports, the DPS trooper attempted to make a traffic stop for a GMC Yukon near Golder and 46th Street for a traffic violation. The driver, later identified as Carlos Rivera, did not comply and fled from the state trooper. As Rivera evaded the officer, he lost control of the GMC Yukon and crashed on a private driver near US 385 and Yukon Street. Rivera was transported to Medical Center Hospital in stable condition. Rivera was charged with evading arrest and possession of a controlled substance, and also had outstanding warrants from Ector County for the unauthorized use of a motor vehicle. This article is entitled Permian Praise. XTO VP Corey Quarles says oil-rich basin is extremely important to U.S. energy security and economy. By Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. The Permian Basin and its importance to the country's energy production was the center of attention during the Midland Chamber of Commerce's annual State of Oil and Gas Luncheon Tuesday. ExxonMobil annually publishes a global energy outlook that is the basis for the company's business plans. Corey Quarles, Vice President of ExxonMobil subsidiary XTO Energy, shared insights from ExxonMobil's global energy outlook during the luncheon. There is certainty in the short-term outlook, Quarles told his audience, with global oil demand surpassing pre-pandemic levels, rising 2 million barrels to 102 million barrels a day in 2023. Demand this year is expected to set a record, he added. The United States is the largest oil producer in the world at 13 million barrels a day, Quarles told the gathering, estimating 20% of that additional 2 million barrels came from U.S. producers. Where does that U.S. oil and gas come from? Here. Almost half is from the Permian Basin, and almost all of the growth in 2024 will be from the Permian Basin. The Permian Basin is important to U.S. energy security and to the economy, he said. Longer term, the outlook is less certain and subject to a wide range of scenarios, he continued. Which scenarios come to be will depend on what path the energy transition takes, he said. ExxonMobil considers a range of scenarios to make its projections, while others, such as the International Energy Agency's Net Zero Emissions by 2050 scenario, work backward from a hypothetical outcome. But all assumptions center around government policy, population, and economy, he said. And by 2050, he said the numbers are clear that global energy demand will rise as the population grows by 2 billion people and economic expansion results in the largest growth of the middle class in history. The numbers also make clear oil and gas will continue to supply at least half of the world's energy, he said. Renewables will grow the fastest, but still comprise only about 15% of supply. Emissions will also fall, Quarles said. The Permian Basin will be big and will be extremely important, he said. Permian Basin operators will be impacted moving forward by development trends and technical advancements, he predicted. Quarles said the region is blessed with stacks and stacks of productive formations, likening it to a layer cake. When the unconventional shale revolution began, he said, operators approached those shales much as they did conventional shales, targeting only one stack. New trends and technical advancements are allowing operators to develop all of the cake at the same time, capturing resources and adding value and longevity. The way ExxonMobil sees it, the Permian Basin will be producing for decades. 70 plus years is what we're looking at for oil and natural gas production, he said. The biggest opportunity and challenge for Permian operators is to provide the low-cost, low-carbon oil and natural gas the world demands, he said. But that will require the right technology, as well as a capable and very skilled workforce, he said. While declining to discuss the pending acquisition of Pioneer Natural Resources in depth, Quarles said the combination of the two companies will accelerate Pioneer's stated goal of net zero emissions from 2050 to 2035. When the deal is completed, he said production from the newly combined entity will immediately jump to 1.3 million barrels a day, rising to 2 million barrels a day by 2027. I'm excited about this merger, and I want everyone to be excited about this merger and what it means to the Permian Basin, he said. These are two of the most well-respected and best-run companies in the Permian Basin. We will be able to bring our capabilities together and achieve what each company couldn't achieve separately. This article is entitled, What's Replacing Cattle Barren? Reports circulate of a new bar and grill taking over location, by Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. Last February, Cattle Barren closed its doors to the Midland community by taping a note on the front door reading, At this time, Cattle Barren Midland is officially closed. We appreciate the years of dining we have been able to share with you and your families. The news came as a surprise to the community due to its regular operating hours just days beforehand. Now, reports from Maybe in Midland, Odessa, a Facebook page run by community member Kevin Dawson, say a new restaurant is taking over the 418 West Wadley Avenue brick and mortar. Las Islas Bar and Grill is said to be the new occupant. According to Dawson, Las Islas will be owned and operated by La Hacienda and La Santa Sports Bar and Lounge owner Jose Castaneda. Dawson also said Castaneda owns a restaurant in the Chicago area with the same Las Islas name. Dawson said he confirmed the new food hub by connecting the dots from real estate filings, tax filings, and contractors who are working on the building. The Reporter-Telegram has reached out to both La Hacienda and La Santa for comment and confirmation. The Las Islas Bar and Grill website for the Chicago location, which features the same logo Dawson posted on Maybe in Midland, Odessa, says the restaurant offers a large variety of sushi, seafood, steak, margaritas, chicken, and more. This is the Life Tributes column. Johnny Mark Arnold, July 31st, 1952 to January 19th, 2024. Johnny Mark Arnold, 71, of Midland, left for his last journey on January 19th. Johnny was born in Odessa on July 31st, 1952 to K.P. Arnold and Louise Arnold Queen. Johnny was raised and rooted in Odessa, but later moved to Midland to care for his late mother. Johnny is preceded in death by his parents, K.P. Arnold and Louise Arnold Queen, his brother Jimmy Arnold, brother-in-law Stephen Carter, and the love of his life, Sherry Hopkins Arnold. Those left to cherish his memory include his sister, Judy Carter of Midland, daughter Brandy Douthat and husband Ross Douthat of Odessa, son Marcus Arnold of Midland, two grandchildren, and one great-grandson. In lieu of flowers, please make a donation to your local animal shelter in his honor. His love of animals, dogs, was unprecedented. A small celebration of life will be held at a later date. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel, and family messages and condolences may be emailed to Pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Sylvia Sue Fowler, July 12, 1937 to January 14, 2024. Sylvia Sue Fowler, a shining example of love, faith, and strength, passed away peacefully surrounded by her loving family on January 14th. Born on July 12, 1937, in Crane, Texas, she was a woman whose life beautifully melded devotion to her family, a distinguished career, and a steadfast faith. Married for 64 years to the late Ted C. Fowler, Sylvia's union with him was a testament to enduring love and mutual devotion. This blessed partnership brought into their lives a daughter, Julie Smith, and a cherished grandson, Cooper Smith, both of Scottsdale, Arizona. Her spirit, forever interwoven into the fabric of her family's and friends' lives, will remain a guiding light, and her memory will be cherished and remembered with profound affection and respect. Carol Franklin. Carol Franklin of Midland passed from this life on January 21st in Midland. A viewing will be held before the funeral service, beginning at 10 a.m. Funeral immediately following at 11 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Diane Villa. Diane Villa, 39, passed away on January 17th in Lubbock. A visitation will be held Tuesday, January 23rd, from 10 a.m. till 8 p.m., with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, January 24th at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Stanton Memorial Funeral Home and Chapel. Virginia Faye Davis. Virginia Faye Davis, age 83 of Midland, went to be with the Lord January 20th. Visitation will be held Thursday, January 25th at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. A funeral service will be held Friday, January 26th at Ebenezer Missionary Baptist Church, 2400 Tyler Street, starting at 11 a.m. Interment will immediately follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com. Bobby Wayne New. Bobby Wayne New, 87 of Midland, passed away January 22nd. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, January 26th at Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Graveside service will be held at 1:30 p.m. Monday, January 29th at Magnolia Funeral Home and Memorial Gardens in Magnolia, Texas. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home in Midland, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Byron Lee Cook, Jr. Byron Lee Cook, Jr., 70 of Midland, passed from this life on January 9th in Midland. There are no services scheduled at this time. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland.
Ector County Commissioner Mike Gardner was back in court Tuesday in Lancaster County, Nebraska. District court on a second-degree assault charge in connection with the accidental shooting of his grandson. According to court staff, Gardner's next court date is at 10:30 a.m. March the 12th. Gardner is up for re-election with early voting starting in February and Election Day on March the 6th. Gardner faces David Shaw, Larry Glenn Robinson, and Linda Young Angley. Gardner turned himself into authorities October the 2nd. Days after he shot his grandson during a wedding, Gardner was officiating. He was released after posting a $10,000 bond. Gardner planned to fire off a gun to start off the ceremony, but when he cocked back the hammer of the gun, it slipped, and a homemade blank fired and struck the 12-year-old in the shoulder. Originally, Gardner was arrested on suspicion of child abuse and neglect, serious bodily injury, which is punishable by 0 to 3 years in prison, 9 to 18 months of post-release supervision, a $10,000 fine, or both. The second-degree assault charge carries a prison sentence of 0 to 20 years. On Tuesday, Gardner said the March hearing will be with attorneys from both sides and a judge without a jury. He said his hope is they reach an agreement that takes felony charges off the table. A felony would make him ineligible for office. He said he absolutely did not do it on purpose and was devastated by injuring his grandson, who Gardner says tells him daily he has forgiven him and knows he didn't mean to do that. The shooting made national news with the Washington Post reporting Gardner used a borrowed Pieta 1860 snub-nosed revolver that was loaded with homemade blanks. Gardner said he did not use a fully loaded blank because he did not want a loud bang, and that's why he used a homemade blank. While he had shot blanks before, Gardner admitted that he had not shot a homemade blank before that day. Gardner said he used someone else's gun instead of one of his own because it was more suitable for what I had in mind for the wedding. The firearm is not considered an unsafe gun, he said. Gardner told the Post he understands the shooting has put his political future in jeopardy. He knows he won't be in office anymore if he's convicted and said he won't push back if it comes to that. That's how it is, said Gardner. If you're convicted, you don't serve anymore. I've never tried to skirt that issue. He said the grandson he shot was one of his 20 grandchildren. The boy is a twin and loves baseball, hunting, and fishing, Gardner said. He added that the 12-year-old has been discharged from the hospital and is back in Odessa. Accidents happen, Gardner said, before thanking God for his grandson surviving. Local news roundup. Man suspected of axe attack. An Odessa man was arrested on a felony warrant Friday, 4 days after he was accused of going after another man with an axe. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers received a disturbance call from the 2000 block of East 42nd Street around 6 p.m. January the 15th. And when they arrived, a man said he was sitting in his truck with his window down when a man later identified as Justin Morales, 34, approached him wanting a fight. The man told officers Morales threw a medicine pack and liquid at him before going to his Dodge Ram to retrieve an axe. According to the report, the man had photo evidence showing Morales approaching him with the axe. Officers found the Ram empty in the 2800 block of North Century and called Morales on his cell phone. According to the report, Morales admitted to rushing at the man with the axe but said it was because he was in fear of his life. He also admitted marijuana found in the Ram was his. Warrants were issued for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and possession of marijuana. Morales was booked on the warrants Friday and released the same day after posting surety bonds totaling $26,000. Burglar rented U-Haul storage unit. The Odessa Police Department arrested a man Friday they believe burglarized the home of a woman he knew and rented a storage unit to stash the items he stole. According to an OPD report, a woman called authorities on January the 2nd to report she believed two men she knew broke into her home in the 2300 block of Golder Avenue while she was away and stole numerous items, including a 65-inch TV, a washer and dryer, an entertainment center, a refrigerator, and a bathroom sink with a black marble top. Later the same day, police were summoned back to the same house because the woman said one of the suspects, Christopher Glenn, was causing a disturbance. She also said he was being followed by a U-Haul truck. Officers obtained a search warrant for the truck and found a 65-inch TV inside. They also learned Glenn, age 33, had rented a storage unit from the same location he'd rented the truck, the report stated. An employee of the business said he'd helped Glenn unload an entertainment center, and in the process, he noticed a washer and dryer, a refrigerator, and a sink with a black marble top inside the storage unit, the report stated. When officers searched the storage unit, they found multiple items matching the stolen items, the report stated. During the investigation, Glenn called police to say the alleged victim asked him to store the items, the report stated. Warrants were issued for burglary of habitation and theft of property, $30,000 to $150,000, and Glenn was booked on those warrants Friday. Glenn remained in the Ector County Jail Monday on surety bonds totaling $50,000. And accused of attacking wife and stepson. An Odessa man was arrested early Sunday morning after he was accused of punching his wife in the face and threatening to kill his stepson. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers received a disturbance call shortly after midnight Sunday from the 1500 block of Beverly Street. When officers arrived, they spoke to a 45-year-old woman with an injured nose who told them her husband, Brent Robbins, 44, punched her during an argument over a lost phone. The woman also told the officers her 29-year-old son and Robbins began to fight after she was punched, and during that fight, her husband got a knife. According to the report, the woman said Robbins told her son that if he didn't leave the home, he was going to kill him while he slept. The son gave a similar account, the report stated, although neither the son or the woman wanted to press charges. Robbins was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and assault. Robbins was released from the Ector County Jail Monday after posting surety bonds totaling $27,500. West Texas Symphony spotlights one of its own, Midland. West Texas Symphony kicks off 2024 performances with WTS Spotlight, an annual event highlighting one of the orchestra's top musicians at 7:30 p.m. February the 3rd at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Ben Fairfield, West Texas Symphony's co-principal trumpet and members of the Lone Star Brass, will be featured. Accompanied by the West Texas Symphony Orchestra, he will perform Franz Joseph Haydn's Trumpet Concerto. Audiences will also enjoy other fantastic works, including Florence Price's Andante Moderato, Mozart's Overture to the Marriage of Figaro, and Franz Schubert's Symphony No. 5. In addition to the West Texas Symphony, Fairfield also performs as principal trumpet of the Abilene Philharmonic and is the artistic director of the West Texas Symphonic Brass, who just recently performed their annual brass Christmas concert in Midland and San Angelo. He frequently performs as a guest member of trumpet sections throughout the United States, including the Fort Worth Symphony Orchestra, New Mexico Philharmonic, Santa Fe Symphony, Boulder Philharmonic, San Jose Symphony, and the San Angelo Symphony. Fairfield is a veteran of the United States Army, performing as a member of the United States Continental Army Band at Fort Monroe, Virginia. With this group, he performed throughout the United States on tours with both the concert band and brass quintet. He was a featured soloist with the United States Continental Army Band and several orchestras, performing in many of the nation's leading concert halls, including Carnegie Hall, the Meyerson Symphony Center, Bass Performance Hall, the Kennedy Center, and the Arch Center for the Performing Arts. In March 2017, Fairfield and pianist Leanna Horan gave the New York City premiere of Grammy Award-winning composer Michael Dougherty's The Lightning Fields for trumpet and piano at the 92nd Street Y in Manhattan, New York City. The duo has also worked with Eric Wazin on his popular sonata for trumpet and piano, with plans to record the sonata in collaboration with the composer in the near future. The duo's recording of Lucid Dream, an arrangement of Michael Nyman's flugelhorn and piano, can be found on iTunes and YouTube. Fairfield holds a Bachelor of Music Education degree from James Madison University and graduate degrees, Master of Music and Doctorate of Musical Arts in Trumpet Performance from the University of Miami Frost School of Music. He is a Vincent Buck Performing Artist, a division of Kahn Selmer. Adult tickets range from $12 to $60 and can be purchased at WTXS.org or calling 800-514-3849. Student tickets are offered for $12 for any level, any seat, with a paying adult or valid college ID. Patrons are also invited to experience Symphony Soundbites, a pre-concert supper held before the performance in the Great House Recital Hall at the Wegner Noel Performing Arts Center. By purchasing a ticket to this pre-concert event, patrons will enjoy dining with friends as Maestro Gary Lewis and featured artist Fairfield provide an insider's view of the evening's performance. Seating is limited. Tickets may be purchased for $30 each by calling the Wagner Noel box office at 432-552-4437. Deadline to purchase Soundbites tickets is January the 26th. This day in history. Today is Wednesday, January the 24th. And on January 24th in 1984, Apple Computer began selling its first Macintosh model, which boasted a built-in 9-inch monochrome display, a clock rate of 8 megahertz, and 128K of RAM. On this date, in 1943, President Franklin D. Roosevelt and British Prime Minister Winston Churchill concluded a wartime conference in Casablanca, Morocco. In 1945, Associated Press war correspondent Joseph Morton was among a group of captives executed by the Germans at the concentration camp in Austria. In 1965, Winston Churchill died in London at age 90. In 1978, a nuclear-powered Soviet satellite, Cosmos 954, plunged through the Earth's atmosphere and disintegrated, scattering radioactive debris over parts of northern Canada. In 1985, the Space Shuttle Discovery was launched from Cape Canaveral on the first secret all-military shuttle mission. In 1989, confessed serial killer Theodore Bundy was executed in Florida's electric chair. In 2003, former Pennsylvania Governor Tom Ridge was sworn as the first secretary of the new Department of Homeland Security. In 2011, a suicide bomber attacked Moscow's busiest airport, killing 37 people. Chechen separatists claimed responsibility. In 2013, President Barack Obama's Defense Secretary Leon Panetta announced the lifting of a ban on women serving in combat. In 2018, former sports doctor Larry Nassar, who had admitted molesting some of the nation's top gymnasts for years under the guise of medical treatment, was sentenced to 40 to 175 years in prison. In 2023, the sci-fi indie hit Everything Everywhere All at Once led Oscar nominations with 11. It would go on to win 7, including Best Picture. Stay on track with mindful eating practices. Being mindful when eating can be challenging, especially when there are many events going on, such as school and business parties, family gatherings, and more. Staying on track with your wellness goals can be easy by simply being more strategic. Try these 4 tips to help you be intentional and mindful when eating in the new year. Enjoy the foods you love. Enjoying the foods you love in moderation is key to reducing binging and overindulging. It sounds counterintuitive, but actually the more we restrict certain types of foods, the more we will think about it and the more we'll want it. As soon as there's an opportunity to eat it, more chances than not, we will overeat. Life is too short to not enjoy your grandmother's original recipe. All foods fit in moderation, and it's okay to give yourself grace with food. Use smaller plates. Portion control is key when it comes to enjoying the foods you love. Using smaller plates may help you stay in control because it allows you to serve yourself on a 4 to 6 inch plate at a single time. It also creates the illusion that you have a full plate since the surface area is smaller. One thing to remember is to first start off by filling half of your plate with salad or vegetables, a fourth of your plate with a starchy food, and a fourth of your plate of protein, 3 to 4 ounces, about the size of your palm. Check in with yourself. Before you begin eating, ask yourself questions to figure out if you really are hungry or are you just bored, stressed, or excited. Slowing down, being present in the moment, chewing slowly to really savor the different textures and flavors is a game changer. Check in with yourself while you are eating to see if you are still hungry, getting full. Stopping when we are satiated, understanding ourselves, and understanding the setting around us can help us to not overeat. Find an accountability partner. More likely than not, there is a friend or family member who is also looking to stay mindful and on track with their wellness goals too. Having an accountability partner can be extremely helpful for that extra motivational and emotional support. Check in with each other, share ideas, experiences, and anything you may be proud of where food was involved. Not only will it help you bond with someone, it may inspire those around you to be more mindful when eating during the holiday. Being mindful and in tune with your body takes time and practice. Be patient with yourself and give yourself the same grace you give to others. And here's a recipe for turkey sausage carbonara. 3 turkey sausage links, 1 tablespoon of butter, 6 ounces high fiber pasta, 1 cup frozen peas, 2 eggs, 1 cup parmesan, 1/2 tablespoon of pepper, salt as desired. And directions, heat a large pan over medium-high heat with butter. In a pot, bring 6 cups of water to a boil, then add in pasta and cook per package instructions. Cut the turkey sausage out of their casings and brown. Add peas to turkey sausage once browned and turn the heat off. Add the pasta once cooked. Add pepper and cheese and stir to combine. Crack the eggs and stir to combined.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, January 24th, 2024. Mayo Clinic, stem cell research headed into space. A Mayo Clinic research experiment will be part of a payload that launches into space from NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Cape Canaveral, Florida, on January 29th, subject to weather conditions and other factors. The research team from the lab of Dr. Abba Zubair is preparing stem cells for the flight to test how the absence of gravity plays a role in bone loss. Quote, "We've known for some time that astronauts lose bone density on long-duration space flights," end quote, says Zubair, a laboratory medicine and pathology specialist at Mayo Clinic in Florida. Quote, "We want to understand how this occurs so we can work on solutions that prevent bone loss not only in astronauts while they're in space, but also in patients here on Earth," end quote. The research project will examine the effect of gravity on a type of stem cells derived from bone marrow known as mesenchymal stem cells, or adult stem cells with growth factors and healing potential. They play a key role in tissue repair and regeneration. Zubair's team will look at how the stem cells function while in space. Zubair says the experiment could have implications for future space flights that include taking humans to Mars. This early research also could affect human clinical trials down the road, perhaps a decade away, according to Zubair. Quote, "We will use what we learn from this project to advance our research on the road to clinical trials, with the ultimate goal of testing therapeutic agents that can prevent or treat bone loss that comes with osteoporosis, as well as bone loss that occurs in patients who are bedridden for long periods of time," end quote, he says. The research will be conducted during two space flights. The first space flight will evaluate the impact of microgravity on bone-forming stem cells. The second space flight is tentatively planned for the end of the year and will analyze the effect of microgravity on other cell types that participate in bone formation or loss. A compound will be tested that can be used to treat bone loss in space and potentially on Earth. The first foray into space for Zubair's research was in 2017, when a payload of several samples of donated stem cells blasted off from Kennedy Space Center in a test to determine if they could hold up in space and be more quickly mass-produced in microgravity for use in stroke treatment. Mayo Clinic is collaborating with BioServe Space Technologies in Boulder, Colorado, which is providing the space flight hardware for the research project. Mayo Clinic Minute. Penicillin allergy? Maybe not. Penicillin belongs to a group of antibiotics used by healthcare professionals to combat a wide array of bacterial infections, including strep throat, ear infections, and pneumonia. Penicillin, one of the most widely prescribed antibiotics, is also one of the most frequently reported medication allergies. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says 10% of people living in the U.S. report having a penicillin allergy. However, less than 1% are truly allergic. Dr. Nipuni Rajapaksi, a pediatric infectious disease physician with the Mayo Clinic Children's Center, says if your healthcare team can't prescribe the preferred antibiotic for your bacterial infection due to a listed allergy, it can pose additional risks to your health. Penicillin is one of the most prescribed antibiotics for bacterial infections. Quote, and the best treatments for things like strep throat, ear infections, pneumonia are penicillin or another antibiotic in that same family, end quote, says Rajapaksi. She says if your medical chart indicates a penicillin allergy, your healthcare team needs to look for other options. Quote, we know that these other antibiotics are often not as effective as a penicillin, so that means you might not get better, end quote, Rajapaksi says. And they can be harder on your system. She says people often misinterpret side effects of the medication as symptoms of an allergy. Quote, symptoms of a true antibiotic allergy are things like hives, rash, so usually a very itchy kind of raised rash that can develop, end quote, she says. It's estimated 50% of people will outgrow the allergy within 5 years. Talk with your healthcare team to find out if you need to be tested for a penicillin allergy. Penicillin skin testing and oral challenge doses are reliable methods for evaluating a penicillin allergy.
Dear Dr. Roach, my husband had a stress test done several years ago, and at the time it was discovered that he had a bundle branch block in his heart. No one mentioned it until recently, after he had an episode with a fast heartbeat, sweating, and trouble breathing. He was taken to the emergency room, and the cardiologist indicated that there are 3 bundle branches, and he has 2 blocked. Since he has had this heart problem, the doctor has recommended that we focus on it. He mentioned that he could put in a pacemaker, but also suggested a LUX-DX insertable cardiac monitor, ICM system. This way, they insert the ICM, which is about the length of a paperclip, and runs on a battery that is safely sealed within the device, just under the skin. It then has a monitor to keep track of and send information to the doctor's office. Then they could determine when or if a pacemaker will be necessary. We had never heard of this. Are you familiar with them? We've never heard of a heart bundle branch block either. Any information you could provide would be appreciated. Dr. Roach answers, your husband has 2 separate issues. The first being that his bundle branch block is an electrical problem within the heart. The heart has an electrical system starting up in the right atrium with a natural pacemaker of the heart. Special conduction tissue leads to another structure, the antroventricular node, which regulates conduction down to the ventricles. There, three bundle branches continue conducting the electrical impulse to the muscle of the heart. Once the electrical impulse hits the muscle cells, they contract. The branches ensure that they will all contract at the same time for coordinated muscle contraction. The bundle branches can degenerate over time or get damaged in a heart attack. You can write to Your Good Health, Dr. Keith Roach, at P.O. Box 536475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475. Dear Abby, I am an unhappily married woman with young children. I am attracted to a friend of mine and my husband's, but he is also married. He is a bit older, and I can't tell for sure if he has feelings for me, but sometimes I suspect it. He has made me jewelry and gifts, and I caught him looking at me a few times. We have exchanged messages on social media, and he often asks me questions about myself, what I like, etc. He's also just so quiet that I can't tell if it all means anything. I could never leave my husband and break up my family, and I could never break up someone else's family, but I'm starting to wonder and sometimes think I really am falling in love with him. What should I do? Signed, Crushing in the Midwest. Dear Abby responds, Dear Crushing, face it, you're taken, because you could never leave your husband or break up someone else's marriage. Figure out what's going wrong in your relationship with your husband and resolve to fix it. Some sessions with a licensed marriage and family therapist would be the place to start. Do it now. Another Dear Abby, I am with someone who drinks and gambles and has made countless promises that have been broken. I recently checked his Facebook account, and he follows at least 12 women in their 20s, most of whom he barely knows or doesn't know at all. Most of them are almost naked in every picture. I told him it bothers me, but he doesn't seem to care. I told him it is disrespectful to me as his significant other. I have also told him to think about the things he does that affect our relationship. To him, he's doing nothing wrong. To me, he's disrespecting me, and it's not the only time. He has written to a few of them telling them how beautiful they are. Am I wrong? At a loss in Florida. Dear Abby responds, Dear at a loss, your gentleman friend may be a voyager drawn to photos of random beautiful young ladies. It has nothing to do with respect or the lack thereof he has for you. He likes to look. It is now time to ask yourself why you stay with someone who gambles, drinks, and breaks his promises, which is disrespectful. His voyeurism is the least of your worries. Dear Abby, I went out to eat at a fancy Manhattan restaurant with some of my siblings. One of them overordered and ran up a huge bill. When it came time to pay, he said, "Let's charge it to Daddy's credit card." Our father is well off and probably would have been okay with it, but I objected on principle. We ended up splitting the bill, which irritated me since my wife and I ordered much less. I can't talk to them about it because they'll accuse me of being cheap. What should I have done, and what should I do in the future when it crops up? Because it will. Signed, Money Conscious in New York. Dear Abby responds, the next time you go to a fancy restaurant with your siblings, before the order is taken, tell the server you would like separate checks.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.